biggest news in 600 years. Which is what? The Pope is retiring. The Pope, the vicar, St. Peter, is retiring. I didn't know that that was an option. I always thought of the Pope as being a life appointment, you know, even more than the Supreme Court justices. I think a lot of people were surprised, and it's hard to surprise the Vatican. Since it came out on Monday, we've had a little bit of a chance to kind of let it go through our minds, but it's really quite something. He did announce in Latin. Did y'all have a chance to hear his retirement statement in English? I'm just going to read it really quickly because I think it's important. Portion of it. He said, "After having repeatedly examined my conscience before God, I have come to the certainty that my strengths, due to an advanced age, are no longer suited to an adequate exercise of the Petrine ministry." He told the cardinals, "I am well aware that this ministry, due to its essential spiritual nature, must be carried out not only by words and deeds, but no less with prayer and suffering. However, in today's world, subject to so many rapid changes and shaken by questions of deep relevance for the life of faith, in order to govern the bark of St. Peter and proclaim the gospel, both strength of mind and body are necessary, strengths which in the last few months have deteriorated in me to the extent that I've had to recognize my incapacity to adequately fulfill the ministry entrusted to me." How amazing. Popes are allowed to resign as long as the resignation is done freely and properly. But only a handful have done so. Matter of fact, somebody went back and did it. 600 years since a pope has retired or resigned. I would like to use the word retired. And there's a really good reason why, a number of good reasons why. You might be able to think of some. One of the biggest ones is, and if you look back 600 years to the last time this happened, might the existence of two popes, even when one has stepped down, lead to divisions and instability in the church? There's always been a concern, if you have two popes, even if one has stepped down, where people's loyalties will lie, where people's focus will lie. Might a new resignation precedent here lead to pressures on future popes? Let's hope not, to retire. But to have two, even though one, and he said he will retire from public life and move into the contemplative life, produces great theological and practical problems for the church. You know, you kind of wonder, you know, like, will the real pope step up? You know, I mean, it's a really big deal, really big deal. I won't get into all the theology of it, but pretty amazing for him to announce that. And it's a little bit, I could talk about that forever, but I'm not going to, but it's a little bit of what could potentially go on with having two popes alive at the same time. There's actually a hint of that, actually, with John the Baptist and Jesus in our story for today. Because John the Baptist was very quick to say, "I am not the Messiah. I am not the Messiah. I am not the one you're looking for. I'm not worthy to untie the sandals of the one you're looking for." And yet, people still followed him. People still looked to him. He had his set of disciples. And so John himself, who then ended up in prison, is wondering aloud, is Jesus the Messiah or not? And you have to know that John the Baptist was sent to prison for being honest. Can you imagine being sent to prison for being honest? Literally, that's what it was. Any trivia people about why he's in prison? Basically called out Herod for marrying his brother's wife, basically. The word of today would be adultery. And he called him out on it. And so he got thrown in prison, and he will eventually be beheaded. And things do not look good. And so John is anxious. And so he sends two of his disciples to Jesus. And he wants to know if what he's done has made a difference. Has it been worth it? You know, was I on the right track? And he basically says, "Are you the one who was to come, or should we expect someone else?" And I love Jesus' answer. Did you catch it? You're going to hear one more time, because it's important. "Go back and report to John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive sight, the lame walk. Those who have leprosy are cured. The deaf hear, the dead are raised. The good news is preached to the poor. Blessed is the one who does not fall away on account of me." Does Jesus answer John? Are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else? Does he answer him? He says, go back and tell him what you've seen and heard. Now, Jesus is articulating some common language of how God will work in the world. We actually had to do Psalm 146 today. You saw that? The Lord frees the prisoners, opens the eyes of the blind. You've heard that when Jesus gets up in the synagogue to read, he's actually reading from Isaiah the prophet, that same kind of list of all the wonderful things that will happen when God is released into the world. And so, all Jesus says is, what have you seen? What have you heard? What have you seen me do? That should answer your question. Let me back up and say, in January and February of this year, I've been doing a little series on Do You Know This Jesus? And trying to pull out some of the parts of Jesus that we can sometimes overlook, or things that are not strengths for us. And I've kind of been going through them. Some Christian traditions focus on the death of Jesus. Some focus on the resurrection. Some even focus on the birth. Yet others within the Christian family find themselves focusing on the words and deeds of Jesus Christ, the story of his life between his birth and his death and his resurrection. There's a good group within our Christian family that believe that his teachings, his acts of love, his healing, his justice, his compassion offer a way of life that, if you actually practice it, will bring blessing to the whole world. He says, tell God what you've seen and heard. The lame walk, the deaf hear, the blind see. There is a part within our Christian family that challenges the rest of us to bring the teaching and examples of Jesus to bear on the world. Not to just say what he says, but do what he does. Hence my visual aids for today. And not only on our personal relationships, but also on political structures and the cultural system of our planet. There is a part within our Christian church that insists that Jesus actually wants us to join him in feeding the hungry by sharing our bread, to build and staff hospitals and clinics to help heal the sick, to cross cultural barriers, to love the stranger, to love the alien, to love the immigrant. Oh my gosh. To face corrupt systems, to challenge them to practice justice for the oppressed. Jesus says, go and tell them what you've seen and heard. You see, Jesus really does care about the immediate and felt needs of human beings. He really does. One of the things that we can be guilty of is looking at the felt needs of human beings and you thinking of that as a way, you know, to use it. I'll get to that in a minute. But Jesus really does care about the immediate and felt needs of human beings. Look at the healing stories. Matter of fact, what's fascinating about what I just read in Luke 7 is he has just spent, right before that, he raised a widow's son from the dead. So don't be too quick to make it all a spiritual metaphor. So the dead are raised. Really. The dead are raised. And what's interesting about Jesus' healing stories, and the part that's hard for some of us to hear, is that Jesus does not require a person to respond to an altar call or make a declaration of faith before he heals them, or feeds them, or raises them from the dead. Jesus' teaching stories always invite the listener to come follow me, to do what I do, not just to make a belief statement about something. I think us in our modern kind of evangelicalism have decided that if people make a belief statement that they're good to go. Jesus was never satisfied with that, ever. And yes, as you read this, go and tell John what you've seen and heard, he could be including the spiritually blind and the spiritually deaf in his declaration, for sure. But he also means the real physical needs, the mundane physical needs of those around him. He has met. And we then should too. In the food closets, in the thrift stores, in the prison ministries. And I'm happy to declare that as our little congregation, we are involved in that. Not always directly, but you know, the food we raise at Tin Mountain Roundup, the food we raise through the CBA food drive, the prison ministries. Faye Christie will be here March 10th. She'll be speaking in my place on March. The thrift stores. It's important that we not just take the out and make this all a metaphor. Jesus was really doing it. But here's a confession as I finish. Here's a confession. I'm a product of my experiences. I'm a product of my environment. Okay? I'm a product of the evangelical church, which I love and which we are. But watch some of the extremes that can happen. All I'm going to say right now is just beware of these things in your life, in your work, in your ministry, and keep an eye on where you fall in the continuum of things. I want those who I serve to know that I do it out of love for Jesus. Whether it's the food closet work or the prison ministry work or whatever work we do, I want people to know that I do what I do because I love Jesus, and even more because Jesus loves them. Sometimes that love, and the statement of that love, can get lost in the shuffle of social services that the church can offer. But there are two extremes, and you've probably seen or experienced both of these extremes. See if I can articulate it. I remember reading a book not long ago where there was a homeless shelter run by Christians down in Texas. And before the homeless folks could have dinner, they had to sit through church service and a gospel presentation. And there was great pressure for them to make affirmations of faith. And one of the homeless guys say, you know, like, I've been saved 15 times or whatever, but the bed's warm. I mean, something like that. And then at the other hand are folks who offer services and almost seem embarrassed that they love Jesus. You know, Jesus is never mentioned. Grace is never said. And there has to be something in between that has integrity. Surely there's a middle ground of integrity. Because I think both extremes, whether it's harassing people with the gospel or being embarrassed by the gospel, both extremes rob people of an opportunity to really meet Jesus. You can make Jesus into a program, something to be endured at the one end, or you can make Jesus an embarrassment at the other end. As we live and move in the world, and probably not many of you are running homeless shelters or running food closets, but you are living in the, you are living day to day, in and out, in your work, in your job, in your school, to ask yourself, is Jesus' love flowing from you naturally the way it did from him? And that is not a small task. I think the key to that is to be at home in Jesus' love yourself. If you are at home in Jesus' love yourself, then I do believe that Jesus' love will flow from you naturally. And I do believe we can then share that love with integrity. And we can be ourselves, but also be ourselves in Jesus' love. Beware of falling to either extreme. Don't be embarrassed by Jesus and that you do what you do because you love who you love. Do people know why you do what you do? Does the community around you, does your workplace, does your school, do people know why you do what you do? How often are they going to know who you love? It's a balance. I just want to finish with a short story. This past week, which was beautiful, by the way, those of you who didn't get to ski this week, it was beautiful, wasn't it? It was beautiful. On Monday morning, I went up to the base lodge early to meet and greet participants in Sugarloaf's second New England Blind and Visually Impaired Ski Festival at Sugarloaf. It's called the NEVI Fest, New England Visually Impaired Sugarloaf. Second one, it has grown exponentially. I think maybe they had 40 or so participants, and you need 2 volunteers for each participant. We were, you know, close to 100 people there, so pretty amazing. Scott and Christine Anderson were friends in the ministry here, were really big in coordinating it. Bruce Albertson here at Sugarloaf. And I went up, they invited me to come up and to greet everybody and to offer a prayer of thanksgiving for these young people and adults to be here, offer prayers for their protection. Did you notice when you guys were out skiing, there were a lot of people this week in orange and they were either orange or some of them were kind of a neon green. There were a lot of folks out there this week. Now, I have never volunteered. We have a main adapter program here. I have never volunteered with the disabled skiers, and that's because I'm very insecure in my skiing. I can barely take responsibility for my own skiing, let alone somebody else's skiing, let alone some blind person's skiing, or somebody in a fit ski, or somebody, I mean, I'm a groupie, so I'll go up and I'll say hello, but like, no, I don't volunteer. People say, oh, you should volunteer. I'm like, oh, you have no idea. I'm a fine skier, but the idea of being responsible for somebody else is just too much. So anyway, so my friend Sue Adams, whom a bunch of you know, decided she was going to volunteer for the first time. So there she is on Monday. We've got all these blind folks up in the base lodge, and visually impaired folks up in the base lodge, and she's going to volunteer. Well, they give her this guy to take out, and they're short on volunteers. So she goes, Pam, you just got to go out. You know, you can come out. And this gentleman, he was quite capable. I mean, he was blind, but he was amazing. Joe was from Texas. He's probably in his mid-50s. He's a physical education teacher, a motivational speaker, also a triathlon athlete, and just finished his first Ironman. And hello, blind. I said, are you blind or visually impaired? He says, I don't care, as long as nobody hits me. So I became a blocker. Anybody ever done this? Anybody volunteered? Yeah? Don't hold me to it, but it's fascinating. Anyway, so I said, so you can be a blocker. I said, what is a blocker? And they're like, well, have you ever watched football? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, that's all I have to do. Well, he goes, basically, it's your job to keep an eye out for anybody who is going to ski into our visually impaired person, or to ski between the guide and the blind person. So basically, I just kind of basically ski behind them and help them feel better. I wasn't really going to be able to do much. It was nice of them to let me tag along. I didn't really need to do anything. It was Monday. There was hardly anybody out there. I did keep an eye on things. I didn't really have to do anything, which was good because I'm not sure I could have done very much. But I was a great encourager. And I was just so pleased that they let me tag along. I was so impressed by Joe's approach to life. The time flew by. It was amazing to be with him, and to ride the lift with him, and to just kind of be his eyes. And I said to him at one point, I said, Joe, you are so capable. I don't know what you need from me. So if you need me to be your eyes or to say something, just let me know. Otherwise, I'm just going to, like, tag along and, you know, just be your groupie and learn from you. But I realized later on, as I then read these passages for this Sunday, which I read later, I realized I did actually kind of sort of help the blind see. I didn't cure Joe's blindness. Okay? Did not cure Joe's blindness. But I did help the blind see. And that's, and they adaptive, and kudos off to them. They're not a quote-unquote Christian organization, but boy, they certainly embody some Christian values that are pretty amazing. They help the blind see. They help the lame walk. They help the deaf hear by how they work. And it's good for me to put words to why it is that I always want to be with them, because they're actually doing it. There are ways in our lives where we can come alongside and help the blind see and the lame walk, the deaf hear, those who need assistance. Not in a patronizing way, but in a way that's real. And so as I finish, I just ask, what practical ways are you enhancing the lives of those around you? And by the way, in that list, by the way, are also the widow, the orphan, and the stranger, person who's new to town, the foreigner, the immigrants, the alien. So those of you who don't run into a lot of blind, well, don't run into blind people. Blind people are named after the widow, the orphan, the stranger. We all know them. We all know them. And does anyone know why you do what you do? And do you know why you do what you do? And let this lead us on to this week. Last kind of shocking statement, I pull it out of one song. Dallas Willard says, "Beware of being a vampire Christian. You're after Jesus' blood and nothing else." Didn't make that up. Would you join me in prayer?